Blog Talk Radio.
An insider's look at miracles, holy moments, and the message within the message with Don Nathan Reithart, next on How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. It's Thursday, September 11th, and once again, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles. It's a beautiful day in Los Angeles, and I hope it's a beautiful day where you are today. Thank you so much for joining us. We have an amazing... I'm so excited. We have an amazing show for you today, and we'd love to hear from you, so please call in to listen live or ask questions at 714-242-5244. And you can also email us here at the studio at goodvibeproductions@gmail.com. That 10-digit number again is 714-242-5248. I know you'll want to call in, so let me give you that number again, 714-242-5248. Well, my guest today has a most unusual vocation, which he calls miracle work. Now, this work began 13 years ago when he believed he could give his ex-mother-in-law, who was in a nursing home facing amputation of her feet, a miracle. He's currently working on his new book, Holy Moment, which tells the incredible story of a man, his visions, his miracle encounters, and his unusual connection with Steve Jobs of Apple Computer. That I want to find out about. So would you please give a warm welcome to a beautiful man and a beautiful soul, Don Nathan Reithart. Hi, Don.
Hi there, Lauren. How are you doing?
I am wonderful. I am so excited to have you on the show because I think your story is so compelling and so unusual and can offer our listeners such an opportunity to tap into a little bit more of themselves, to go a little bit deeper.
Yes, it is an unusual story, and it wasn't exactly the easiest story to write because it's all based on fact, but I had to put it in such a way that people could relate to myself and to the story. I didn't want it to be just a series of events. That can get kind of boring.
Well, you know, I've been privy. I read a draft of your book, and even though there's stories, these are your stories, it's one amazing story after another. And I want to, let's get started. I understand you were fascinated by miracles as a kid. How did all of that happen?
Well, I think that it's just something I took a liking to when I was in a Catholic school. The nuns, as miserable as they were, they would take some time out from the harassment and beatings to tell us stories about saints and the little miracles that they would have. And at the time, it was really important for me to hear that because I didn't quite have that softness in my life that I would have liked to have. And so when I would hear that, it kind of provoked an image of something better and something nicer and more lovely in life.
You know, you said something so interesting. You wanted a little something softer in your life, and I know prior to the show we were talking, and part of I could get back to what I said in your introduction is your miracle work is giving hope to people, and some of the people that you have done your miracle work with have been people who have been suffering physically, can you share, there are so many wonderful stories in Holy Moment. But can you share the story of the miracle you worked with your ex-mother-in-law about?
Well, that was sort of the beginning, but the actual beginning, if you don't mind, I'm going to back up a little bit here. The actual beginning was I had gone through a divorce, a long-term marriage, and it was upsetting, and like your world just gets turned upside down. You don't know what to do next. And so you'd raised your five kids and you weren't working, and it's like, well, what do you do now, you know? So I thought, well, one night I was in a deep sleep and I saw a giant mandala that took up my whole inner world, and it was like seeing the whole universe. And it was the most amazing moment I've ever had in my life as far as that type of an event. And the mandala was just perfect. I mean, the little squares and the triangles and the round circles. And I knew something big was up. And then about a couple weeks later, I went and had another vision, and I started to be able to separate vision from dreams. And I saw a white bag floating above me, and it had a J on it. And the significance of that is when I was a kid, the nuns told us about a soul. So kids get funny ideas when you tell them something. They kind of make their own idea of what the adult's telling them. So I saw I saw a soul as a white bag, like you'd have a first, second, or third base on a field for baseball. And so I always thought that was your soul when I was a little kid. So I saw this soul, white bag, like on first base with a J on it, and I automatically knew that J stood for Jesus. And I can't tell you how I knew that, but all my visions, when they come, there's certain things I do know, and I don't know how I know them, but I know them. And I heard this voice, inner voice, said, come on up and fly with me. And I thought, wow, fly with you? It's like, and the first thing that happened, it was so, so revealing. And that's why I wanted to go back to this, because it's important to note that I didn't feel worthy to do that. I said, no, 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 I can't do that. I can't fly. And, you know, I felt like a bad person. I'm getting divorced and nothing was working out. And he said, no, just try. I thought, just try. Like, okay, so I jumped and nope, there I was flying around with Jesus. And it's not your proverbial Jesus I was with. But we flew above all the people down below and all the parks and families and the cars and this and that. When that was over, that was sort of that, along with a huge giant mandala, told me that something big was coming. But what I got from that vision with the flying vision was to stay above the conflict of the divorce, stay above the battleground of all the things that were going on that I found upsetting. And that was a good advice, I think, for anyone. But anyway, I got this. I found this book called The Course in Miracles, and I got this crazy idea, which, from other people's point of view, would be really nuts. When my mother-in-law was in a nursing home, and she was suffering terribly with her feet, and they were sores all over, and she was wrapped like four bandages deep, and there was no relief. They couldn't. The podiatrist wanted to amputate, but she couldn't because of my mother-in-law's health was so poor. So basically it was good luck, just make her comfortable. And what a terrible, terrible thing to face. So I got this idea that I could give her a miracle. So I went over to the nursing home, intermediate nursing home, there in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And when I got there, my ex-wife and her brother were there. And I said, oh, gee, guys, do you think you could go get a cup of coffee? I'd like to talk to your mom. It was weird, and I know my wife probably looked at me kind of like, why do you want to talk to my mom, but it's not important. They left, and then I shut the door, and I asked Dorothy, and I said, Dorothy, we chatted a little bit, and she was always really hard to me, so this was kind of difficult to say. I said, would you like a miracle? And then the strangest thing happened. This woman is a Dutch, you know, very conservative, not exactly on my side of the, you know, she wasn't exactly, didn't have my back, you know. And she looked at me and she said, I would like a miracle. And it got really quiet in that room. And I thought, oh, my gosh, here I go. And then we did what I've done over 200 times since. And it just seemed like the natural light just kind of flowed in. And it was really cool. It was the beginning.
Well, I guess there are two questions I have. One is, what are the conditions of a miracle? And the other is, how did you know that you had this gift to heal people or to, I don't want to put a label on it, or this gift, let's put it that way. You have this gift to heal people in a sense that to take them out of their stress, their worry of an illness they're in, and put them in a peaceful place. How did you know that you had that ability?
That is an excellent question, and honestly, I don't know. I just know that somewhere in my past or in a past life or somewhere, I pulled on something, and I had 100% confidence I could do this. It never fazed me that I couldn't. And I had never had that confidence in my entire life about anything. So where it came from, I don't know. It came from outside of me, that's for sure. And once I did that, it was like, well, the conditions of the miracle. The condition of the miracle is fairly simple. Unlike the ego world we live in, it's one of the simplest things to do. The only thing you have to do is have the need, the faith, and you really can't be afraid. If someone's afraid, I can't help them. I mean, I want to help them, but I can't. What I do, I develop this little system about, I don't know, 2 years or a year after my next mother-in-law, because I had a lot of other people that wanted miracles, like, right away. A woman dying in a hospital, that was kind of wild. And what I developed was, I would ask for some help from within, and I would say, okay, if I get a green bar in my head, you know, a bar like as in a graph, then that's a go. And if I get a red bar, that's a don't do it. Because I didn't want to hurt anybody or make a fool of myself of something it wasn't meant to be. I always got green bars. And it was almost like every situation that was presented to me was already a go. There was a call out there. They had asked for some help. We just happened to, like, bump into each other. In this case, you know, I knew my ex-mother-in-law. But those are the only conditions.
Wow, you know that's a lot. I think I'd like to share, if you don't mind. You had given me a miracle of my own. We have a mutual friend in common, and that's how we initially met, I think, many years ago. I don't even know. It's been, I don't know, maybe 8 years or so ago. It's been a while. But and so you had asked me if I wanted a miracle, and how do you pass up a miracle even if you don't really know what your miracle is? And I think for myself, the interesting thing is to try to find my true self, who Lauren really is. And you had written to me that guidance is a tricky thing. I was going to an important meeting, and you were gracious enough to put me in your prayers, in your highest prayers, and you said, guidance is a tricky thing, Lauren, but I know you'll be just fine, but you just have to trust and know what's best for you, and be in your higher thoughts and not allow the ego to come in and play. And I think I would really like, and you know what, first of all, what you did was amazing, because it allowed me to be me, who I am, and allow, when I let the guard down and the doors were open, all the creative opportunities available came to me, so that I could, like a big tool belt, I could see, oh, here's an option, here's an option, here's an option, here's an option. So that's wonderful. So how can we, or how can you rather, illustrate to our listeners that they too have, as one of your stories in the book, when Father Matthew's brother says, I am the miracle, that we are the miracle, that we have all these tools available to us. So can you give me a little bit more clarity on tapping into our higher thoughts and knowing a little bit more what's in our best interest?
Well, Lauren, I'll try. It's actually pretty... It's pretty simple, and yet people find it difficult because we really have to come to a point in our lives where we just give up and say, I really don't know the answers anymore. Because when we acknowledge that out of our ego and the personality we've built, that we honestly don't have the answer to problems that are stumping us and blocking us, that's when we make an invitation for a higher power to come into our life. That is such a simple process, but people find it difficult because we relate so much to the physical world. And I know it's where we live. However, that's not where we came from, and it's not where we're going to go. I know because I've had communications with people who have gone over there, including my father, and it's not the same as it is here. But it doesn't mean that we don't have an enormous amount of power that we have just waiting if we just remove some of the junk that we put in our way. And
you said something interesting about an invitation, and I think invitation can equate asking for help, and it's so hard, I know from personal experience, to ask for help because we feel, I don't need any help, I can do it myself, or the beliefs and messages that we get growing up, now you have to learn to rely on yourself, you have to do everything yourself, nobody is there to help you. So you have to give yourself permission, and it has nothing to do with you being inadequate or a failure. Because I think people, don't you agree, people equate asking for help sometimes with being a failure. I can't do something, so I need help.
True, and mostly it comes from fear.
Yes.
And I can't tell you how many books I've heard and people quoting, oh, fear is just it's not real and this and that, you know. And I always kind of chuckle. I don't do it when I'm around someone, but I just kind of smile like, yeah, until some terrible thing happens to you, and all of a sudden you're terrified, petrified, running around. How do I get out of this? You know, how do I save my child, or how do I save myself? Fear keeps us from almost everything. So anything good in our lives we would like to have, we will ultimately never see that because of fear. And that's one of the things that I can't help someone bring a miracle into their life if they're afraid. I can't. No matter. Even though the invitation to higher power, the Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it, the universal spirit, even though it's been made, and it's easy, and it's right there in front of you, if you're afraid of it and you're afraid of changing things, then, you know, it can't happen.
You know, I think here's other simple steps, too, and it's all beautiful because I'm a work in progress myself. I'm kind of... Learning as we go. But what I have learned and have experienced, because I am kind of looking at this as a, not a game, but saying, okay, my life isn't the way I want it to be at this moment, so why can't I shift? So it's about a shift. So let's say it's an invitation, which is just lovely, to invite the divine team in and to ask for what we want and then to let that go. To let that go, meaning... we all have an expectation of what we want and how what we want should look. So if you wanted to be an athlete, but you were so determined to be a football player, that's all you wanted to do was be a football player, well, maybe the universe says, yeah, that's great, you want to be an athlete, but I think you'd be a great archer. You want to be, but you said archery, don't know anything about archery, don't want to do archery. So if you step out of your own way, and I never really understood what that meant, like you said, the opportunities are right there if we just get out of the way and allow something that maybe we don't necessarily understand or that can't necessarily be quantified. If we get out of the way and allow what's natural to happen, it happens. It sounds easy, right?
It does. I think a lot of that has to do with that we are afraid to release our control of everything in our lives. We have the answers to everything, but in fact, those answers are never working at the highest level they could be working. And so what I feel is I know I had to do it, and I know everyone has to do it in order to move beyond where they are right now, and that is to change your mind. You have to change your mind. You can't sit with the same. I hear people tell me a lot, well, I just don't know what I want. That's very common because the ego never knows what it wants other than control. But if you release that and say, well, I really don't know what I want, but I would like to be, and it always comes back to the same thing. I want to be happy and I want to feel safe and secure. Those are not that difficult to, ideals to reach. But as long as we put all the junk in front of us, it's virtually impossible. We just keep trying different ways to do the same thing over and over again.
Because
we get
don't,
crafty
yeah.
and creative.
It's a vicious trap or this vicious circle that doesn't stop unless we stop. Like you said before, it's so the steps are so simple.
Can I tell you a story?
Oh, I love a story, please.
Okay.
Before you go on your story, I know this conversation has probably woke up a lot of our listeners out there. They're on the edge of their seats, and we do have a caller here. So let me go to the caller and see if someone would like to ask a question. We're on the line with Don Nathan Reinhart, author of Holy Moment. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. You're here with Don Nathan Reinhart. Would you like to ask a question?
No, I was going to listen to the story and then ask a question.
Oh, okay, caller. Well, okay, wonderful. So, Don, you're on. Our caller is interested in the story first and then a question.
There's a smart caller. one of the things
the
I
pressure,
wanted to
the
do
pressure
was,
is on.
The pressure is on. One of the things I wanted to do was in the book was to make it real. I had it with every guru and all these weird ideas and stuff. I just wanted to tell my experiences, and I wanted it to be something that people could relate to. One of the things that happened to me was that I became very depressed about 2 years ago, and I don't want to get into why, just because we don't have that much time, but it was pretty profound. It had to do with getting older, not having my job didn't work out, I lost my business. Things were not going well, and I just got more and more depressed. And so at some point, I remembered what I used to tell people, other people. I give them this advice. I'd say, before you go to sleep, ask, why am I depressed? Why is this problem happening? So I did that, and I only waited like 10 months, of misery. And so when I fell asleep that night, I had the most amazing vision. I found myself on a beach down like Venice Beach, and I was jogging along the beach, and there was a little short guy next to me, and I was really feeling good. I mean, I was breathing good, and I felt like, wow, this is cool, the beach and the waves and the clean air, and I was really excited. And then all of a sudden, I saw this really ugly being. It looked like a man who had his skin was inside out, and he was really ugly. And I thought, oh, my God, what is that thing sitting on the beach? And so as I ran by, I took my little friend who looked up kind of worried, and I said, come on, let's go around him. And we went around him. Well, whoop, he just appeared again down the beach. And the next thing I know is I don't want him here anymore. And so when I got up to him, I asked my higher power, can I hit him? And said, sure. So I just knocked the crap out of him. And then we went on our run. Now, the vision was very important, and I lost my depression right after that. The being that I saw was the ego, and it was really ugly. And the short guy that was kind of counting on me to protect him was my smaller self, me, and I was the higher self. That was really a breakthrough for me, and I appreciated that help, but you got to ask for it.
I love it. I love it. Okay, caller. Now you're on now. What is your question?
I thought I was the smaller version.
you may be.
I missed the first half of this, but I was. I did a little. Got your email yesterday, Lauren. How the following that you did before the. The gurus that I heard a little bit of, and how culty were they, and how did you break some of the indoctrinations to get to where you are now?
Well, that's a good question. I didn't actually ever follow anyone, but I was sure looking for some answers because I kept thinking there's more here to my life than what I'm seeing. I will tell you this, my initial role in life, though I played many roles, I was to raise, be a good dad. I raised five kids. And even though I worked in criminal justice and a lot of other intriguing things and was trained as a CPA, I didn't really care about all that. I just wanted to be a good dad. And when that was over, I didn't know what to do. But I can tell you this, or at least from my point of view, is I realized even after I'd finished raising the kids and they, you know, got older and recycled themselves and eventually left, I knew that that wasn't it, that there was a lot more to life than what I was seeing, and I really wanted to go to my core.
How old were you then?
When I wanted to go to my core?
Yeah.
55.
And how long did it take?
It happened almost like within 2 years. I mean, it was gradual. It didn't happen like immediately, but it started happening. And that's another thing too. And sorry to interrupt, but this is really important. When you ask for help and it's given you, you kind of take baby steps. You're not going to be given more than what you can handle, but you'll get a lot.
My sort of bias or slight, not an agenda around you, but I've been dealing with a lot of, as a coach, dealing with a lot of people looking to deprogram from some cults. And that was part of my question was the indoctrination at 55 when you realize there's got to be more. And then the two-year journey out of whatever you were indoctrinated to believe.
If I may interrupt, I don't think Don was indoctrinated into any belief. He read, as he mentioned, he read several books. He was wanting.
I'm not suggesting, since he answered that, I'm just saying Don may have been indoctrinated like most of us are without going to any particular guru.
You're right, from learning how to brush our teeth to everything. We're told pretty much what to do. Yeah, I agree.
55 years of da-da-da-da-da-da, and then you're going, there's got to be more than this.
Right, and that's true. And in that 55 years, the da-da-da-da-da, if you don't mind me filling in the blanks there, that 55 years, the da-da-da-da-da was coming from in my own head. So I was constantly almost self-hypnotizing myself, and we all do. I mean, if you've ever been around someone, and most of people do, they'll tell you the same story over and over again. Yeah, well, that's the da-da-da-da-da part, and it may not even be what really happened, and the cause and effect are not actually what we believe them to be. But it's a very good point you bring up, by the way, and I'm glad you appreciate the question and the observation. Thank you.
Well, I think our caller did bring up an interesting topic about people who do follow other cults, whatever that is. But what I find is, you had mentioned this in your book, Don, about that the miracles are already within you. That what you're attempting to demonstrate for people is that they have it within themselves. It's nothing they have to go outside of themselves to find. It's coming
That's
within.
Right. Yeah, and I don't demonstrate it. What I do is I give it to them, the ability to release into that moment. And that is a very powerful, holy moment.
Yeah. And that is just a perfect way to end this lovely, lovely interview with Don Nathan Reinhart, author of Holy Moment. Don, this was fascinating, and I'm sure people want to know perhaps how they can have a holy moment of their own. So if you would like to learn more about Don or just ask a question or get in contact with him, you can reach him at Miracle Works, MiracleWorks@mac.com, MiracleWorks@mac.com. Don, it's been a pleasure, a joy. It's been. I can talk on the subject with you forever.
So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot, Lauren.
Good talking to you again.
Same here. Bye-bye. Once again, my guest today, Don Nathan Reinhart, author of Holy Moment. If you'd like more information, you can reach Don at miracleworks@mac.com, miraclewrks@mac.com. Please join me next time for another wild and fascinating journey in someone else's shoes, when my guest will be. It'll be a mystery. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and thank you so much for joining us today and listening to How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. We'll see you next time, and I hope you find comfort in your own shoes. I'm going to leave you with Keith Chagall and Flight of the Monarch.